Okay, so we're doing dinner tonight at my in-laws' house right after I get done with the show. But as these things always tend to go, my in-laws don't have the channel that the Memphis game is on tonight. And situations like this one are the reason that the Xfinity Stream app is my favorite app on my phone. Because with the Xfinity Stream app, I can take my entire TV lineup, live sports including the Tigers, Xfinity On Demand movies and shows, and even my entire DVR library with me on the go. And it's not just moments like this. I use the Xfinity Stream app when I'm traveling, on vacation, waiting in long lines at the gym, or just simply on my lunch break. Another cool aspect is I can even download recorded shows to watch offline or simply connect and stream on the go with access to millions of Xfinity Wi-Fi hotspots nationwide. I'm telling you, only Xfinity gives you the most free TV shows and movies on the go with the Xfinity Stream app. It's included with any Xfinity TV service, so make sure you're covered and able to always watch your favorite teams like I did. Get started with Xfinity today. Call 1-800-XFINITY, visit Xfinity.com, or drop into a local Xfinity store today for more details.
Now, back to the Gary Parrish Show on 92.9 FM ESPN with Jeff Calkins on today's show, presented by the Blue Monkey.
University of Memphis men's basketball program going to be back inside FedEx Forum tonight. Tip about an hour away, 6 o'clock inside FedEx Forum. It's Memphis, East Carolina. You'll be able to watch it on CBS Sports Network. That is the 24-hour home of CBS Sports and award-winning columnist for the Daily Memphian, who I'm assuming, I probably should have asked in advance, but I'm assuming he's going to be sitting courtside. It's Jeff Calkins. He joins me now. Jeff Calkins, am I right? You're going to be sitting courtside?
I will be, GP, yes.
I'm going to be in studio pregame.
Well, look at that.
And guess what I'm going to say over and over again? James Wiseman quit the team. James Wiseman quit the team. James Wiseman quit the team.
Oh,
can't wait. Can't wait.
That's going to be awesome. Well, Gary will say, well, you see, when James Wiseman quit the team, what's the over-under for quit the team tonight? What's the over-under for quit the team?
Every time they ask me anything about Memphis, I will mention James Wiseman quit the team. So, Gary, Memphis really got out in transition in the first half, and they outscored East Carolina 17-4 in transition points. What do you attribute that to? Well, Zook, what you have to understand is that once James Wiseman quit the team the week before Christmas, this team had to learn how to play a different way, and that means taking advantage of transition opportunities because you're now a guard-heavy roster with the absence of DJ Jeffries and James Wiseman, who quit the team the week before Christmas. And so I'm not surprised to see Memphis really try to push the ball in transition. It's probably the smartest way to try to score under these less-than-ideal circumstances where you're without two of your top three players from your opening night roster because the best quit the team the week before Christmas.
Have you got any pushback from, like, anyone in positions of, like, James Wiseman camp or anything on this quit the team stuff?
Well, I have no contact with James Wiseman's camp, but I know people who work at the University of Memphis and people who work in the Memphis basketball program.
They're not mad.
I promise you, they're not mad. I will tell you this: nobody has ever told me. Nobody connected to. I don't want to keep it. I'll keep it as vague as possible. Nobody connected to that school has ever asked me. Or told me, you know what, you should back off a little bit, or you've got that wrong, or that's not a fair assessment of exactly what happened. Not a single person.
Yeah. Well, and I bet because in fact he did actually quit the team.
That's what he did. Yeah. He did the week before Christmas. You got to say the week before Christmas.
You can't say that. The week before Christmas, right.
Or you can say after three games. After playing three games, either one's fine, but you have to make sure he quit the team the week before Christmas, or he quit the team after only appearing in three games. Either one works, but you got to add.
You like
that
better than he quit on his teammates? He quit on his team. Do you like that better? Do you like what? Yeah, what do you feel? How does that work?
Okay, well, I've written that and I've said it on radio. I don't think I've actually taken that to television, but I can tonight. Like tonight, I can up the ante a little bit and be like,
You know, Precious Achiuwa, what you have to understand is that you know, he's under a huge burden, you know, when James Wiseman, you know, quit on him. And,
Yeah, you know, Zook, the thing about this Memphis team, Adam Zucker is my host, so I address him as Zook. So, you know, Zook, the thing about this Memphis team is that Precious Achiuwa, who is leading all freshmen in the country in doubles-doubles, he is mostly playing the five right now, but he came to Memphis to play the four with James Wiseman. Like, that was the plan. And then James Wiseman, of course, the week before Christmas, he quit on his teammates, quit on his coaching staff, and so now Precious is in this this situation that he never – envision, because his friend, a person he called his brother, let him down.
Who helped bring him to Memphis? Who helped him come bring him to Memphis? Right.
Help bring him to Memphis. Like, let him down in a pretty dramatic way. And so the whole thing has just been a mess. All mostly because the one player everybody was relying on decided to quit.
I almost wish I would turn around and go back and watch the pregame, postgame, and halftime show.
Oh, it'll be tremendous.
I'll DVR it. I still got time. Yeah.
Well, like, people keep asking me when are you going to stop saying that? And my answer is pretty simple. When everybody understands it, when everybody acknowledges that what I'm saying is the truth, when I have nobody else arguing with me, then I will stop making the points over and over again. But as long as people keep trying to argue with facts, I'm going to keep hitting you in the face with facts. And that's all I've done, is hit you in the face with facts. Like, even today in the last segment, I was talking about Auburn and Arkansas. Now, Auburn was ranked in the top 10, 22-2 last week. And then its best NBA prospect, Isaac Okoro, hamstring injury. Now, he's going to come back. It's a week or 2 week thing. He'll be back. But he missed his first game of the season this past weekend at Missouri. Auburn, 22-2, has been ranked in the as high as the top 5 this season. And immediately after you remove the best NBA prospect from the team, they go to Missouri, which has a losing record in the SEC. They're 13-13 overall, outside of the top 100 at KenPom. As soon as you take Auburn's best NBA prospect off the team, Auburn went to Missouri and lost by double digits. Now, what happened? Did Bruce Pearl forget how to coach? No, it's just like you took his best NBA player off, and the team's drastically different. And then Arkansas played again last night. Arkansas was 16-5. Safely in the NCAA tournament field. Eric Musselman in contention for best first-year coach in the country. His best NBA prospect, Isaiah Joe, has to have surgery. They have played 5 games since Isaiah Joe was sidelined. They are 0-5. They went from 16-5 to 16-10. Can't beat anybody without Isaiah Joe. Because when you remove the best NBA prospect from a team, that team is drastically changed. And when you remove the best NBA prospect and the third best scorer, well, then it's even more so. So when people can accept that as a fact and stop pushing back, I'll stop repeating the facts. That's my promise to you and everybody else.
All right, people. You are.
now it's up to you.
We have the power here.
Well, like,
honestly, if I stay at home, I can watch you. And I can watch the debate. Like, I kind of want to watch the debate. Can you imagine that Bloomberg just bought his way onto that damn stage, you know?
You know
what?
I'd
like to see that.
Hey, I don't know anything about this kind of stuff other than, like, you know, what I see on TV and read on a surface level. I'm not going to try to be a political analyst the same way people who aren't basketball analysts try to be basketball analysts. Like, I'll be a basketball analyst because that's literally my job. But I'm not going to try to be a political analyst because I'm not a political analyst. So I'm not going to argue on Facebook with political analysts because I'm just going to acknowledge I don't know as much as they do. So it's probably stupid of me to try to argue with them. But I won't be surprised if Bloomberg wins this nomination.
Well, the funny thing about it, so it's amazing to me how much money works. Like, anyone who thinks, like, marketing doesn't work, everyone's out there that they're debating, they're going door to door, whatever. Bloomberg is just spending $1 million a day on ads, and every time you can't be on Facebook without seeing a Bloomberg ad, right? I mean, it's just insanity how much he's there, and he's only spent something like 1% of his net worth. Like, why is he spending $300 million, $400 million so far, something like that on this? It's only 1% of his net worth. Like, he could do this 5 more times, and whatever, 5% of your net worth to be president of the United States, who cares, right? That'd be fun to be president of the United States, maybe. But the funny thing is, though, every time you turn around, he's saying something. Like, maybe it doesn't matter in this day and age of Trump what you say anymore, and maybe we realize that doesn't matter for billionaires. They can say anything they want, right? But, like, there's video clips of Bloomberg saying all kinds of crazy stuff, like, for a Democrat. Like, he's talking about how easy it is to be a farmer. Have you seen that clip? He said, well, I could teach anyone to be a farmer. You just put a seed in the ground, water it, up it comes. Like, he sounds like, or be a welder. I could put a, you know, whatever. You just stand at the whatever, blah, blah, blah. And then he's like, the transgender thing is big with the Democrats, right? Like, they believe in the whole transgender thing. And he's calling the transgender – there's a clip of him just a year ago describing transgender people as a guy in a dress trying to go into the bathroom. Like, that's not your typical Democratic talking point, right? And then the stop and frisk thing. He's basically saying, yeah, you know, they're all black people. You look the same. They just, you know, just stop them, frisk them, and there's your answer to crime. Like, that's basically what he's – and that guy's going to be the Democratic nominee. Like, it shows the power of money. Like, if that guy can be on the Democratic nominee, the Democratic Party is supposed to be the power that's supposed to be the party that represents black people more than any other, get more black votes, that cares about things like transgender rights, and that whatever, like, cares about blue collar people. And he's just like, he says all this crazy stuff, like, not crazy stuff, whatever, like, yes, crazy stuff. Nobody cares, because every time you turn around, there's a Bloomberg ad hitting you in the face.
Right. Well, I wonder if it's just, like, from an options perspective, like, the goal seems to be, like, just who can beat Donald Trump, and can a 78-year-old coming off of a heart attack beat Donald Trump? Like, maybe, I don't know, but, like, I can certainly understand why that might be a problem. And
I'm taking Trump. If you give me the Trump in the field, I'm taking Trump at this point. I'm taking Trump.
I think he's going to be reelected as well. But if you told me who's the best option, not tonight, but when it's election day, time to go.
I don't think any of them.
I think Bloomberg maybe could. I don't think any of the others could. I'm not sure he could.
I just don't think Democrats are going to vote for him. Like,
well, what are your options?
It is incredible. We're going to have. I think it's going to be Bernie. That's what I think it's going to be. Literally, there's a video. Speaking of, there's a video of Bernie coming back from Russia at some point, right? And he goes on and on about how great all things are in Russia, like the things they do better than us. And I just can't, you know, wait till the Trump people get a hold of Bernie talking about how great Russia is, you know, and play that over and over again, like. I don't know, man. I like the Grizzlies to make the playoffs. At
right.
Point, I like Trump to be president again.
Yeah, I'm gonna take. If you ask on the big three important topics in this country right now, I'm gonna go with Grizzlies do make the playoffs.
Yep.
Tigers don't make the NCAA tournament, and Donald Trump is reelected as president of the United States.
That would be, but it's, you know, the bubble bubble is weak in the presidential election these days. You got to say it's a soft bubble.
In the end,
you got to pick someone to be the nominee, and it's a soft bubble. You know,
no, I think the proper metaphor here is Trump's got a weak schedule in front of him.
Right.
He's got a weak schedule.
Yeah, he does. Who's going to beat him, right? Like, I think that's the issue. Who is going to beat him?
I think he's – yeah, who's going to beat him? Like, yeah, you look at who's in front of him, and who's going to beat him?
Right.
I don't know.
Who's
going to
beat him?
Like,
yeah.
I don't think
– anyway, I'd like to hear you tonight, and I'd like to watch the debate tonight. I'm going to instead be watching Memphis basketball. I'm like, by God, they better win this one.
Yeah, listen.
Even though James Wiseman quit on the team.
He did quit on his teammates and coaches after appearing in just three games the week before Christmas.
Right before Christmas.
Just right before Christmas. Hey, Merry Christmas, everybody. Screw you. I'm leaving. I said this in the opening. I do think there's one thing me and the dummies can agree on. Like, if we can't all get an agreement that the reason this season has gone south is because James Wiseman and DJ Jeffries are no longer a part of the team, and it happened before February 1st. By the way, and then we'll get back on subject. But, like, I give you the Arkansas example. I give you the Auburn example. Michigan with Isaiah Livers. I provided that example. And that's just this season. You can go back to 2013 Kentucky. You can go back to any number of teams where I've provided all these examples. And still to this day, when I say, tell me the other team that lost its leading score and its third leading score before February 1st and remain good, like, I'm not even joking. Nobody has come up with one. It's amazing. And yet, in the simplest of terms.
So you were going to tell me, what did the dummies agree with you on?
Oh, yeah. So like, if we can't agree on that, even though I just think it's amazing, like, I keep giving you these examples to back what I'm saying. Nobody has a counterexample, but you still think I'm just, like, making something up. It blows my mind. But whatever. What I think me and the dummies can all agree on is that you can't lose at home to East Carolina, even if James Wiseman quit the team the week before Christmas. Like, you gotta win this game. And we talked about it on your show earlier in the week. Like, I don't just say I don't care what happens in this season or in any specific game because Memphis lost its leading scorer and third leading scorer before February 1st, and so, like, whatever happens, happens. I do think there are things to be frustrated by if you're a Memphis fan, and the fact that in the past four losses, they've blown second-half leads, and two of them were double-digit leads with, like, 6 minutes to play. Like, that's frustrating because I understand why you're not supposed to win at Cincinnati. But I also don't understand why you blow a 10-point lead once you're up six. I mean, I don't understand why you blow a 10-point lead with 6 minutes to go. Like, once you got the 10-point lead with 6 minutes to go, you might as well go ahead and win the thing. And same thing with the SMU game four losses ago. Like, they're up 11 with 5:40 left. And I understand you don't have James Wiseman. You don't have DJ Jeffries. Precious Achiuwa got knocked out. Lance Time, but you're still up 11 with 5:40 left, and you allow the other team to go on a 15-0 run to close the game. So the common denominator in the past four losses is that they have blown either big leads or small leads, but leads nonetheless in the second half, and often very late in the second half. And if I'm a Memphis fan frustrated by that, well, then that makes sense to me.
Sure. I think there are absolutely things to be frustrated by down the stretch. And I think that's what's happening. I think people say, okay, yeah, well, we should have won that game. James Wiseman didn't help us beat the 12-point, didn't help us build that 12-point lead. So Why can't you then retain it? Like, you obviously were capable of doing that without James Wiseman and DJ Jeffries. So why can't you retain it? And then it does come down to things like execution and choices. I will say, I think at that point, I think Penny's right when he talks about youth at that point. I mean, what did you see with Cole Anthony? They're up two over Notre Dame, and Cole Anthony comes down, he takes a horrible shot, right? Just a horrible shot, airballs it. Well, I do think that's a place where down the stretch, I think we talked about this, how much youth makes a difference. I do think youth hurts you down the stretch. I do. And I think so again, it's not excuses, it's explanations. I think that is one of the things that is happening here, is that they each feel pressure to do more than they should individually on the offensive end, particularly, and they don't play with particular maturity. I think is one of the marks of a mature team is when you can handle those situations, and they are not that. They are by no stretch are they a mature team.
No, I thought earlier this week on your show, you summarized it well. Like, there is a difference between being young and being overwhelmingly talented while also young. There was a scenario where Memphis was going to be overwhelmingly talented, also young. And though that is, and we talked about this in the preseason, that is still a recipe for bumps in the road. That is also a recipe for you can win a whole lot of games, especially in the American Athletic Conference. But right now, among the, quote, young players on the Memphis roster, the only one based on high school ranking that's supposed to be overwhelming as a college player in his freshman year of college is the one that is overwhelming in his freshman year of college, Precious Achiuwa. Like Boogie Ellis is a borderline top 40 prospect. Players who are borderline top 40 prospects are not often big, impactful players for nationally relevant teams. And everybody else was ranked outside of the top 50, you know, coming out of high school. And so Memphis has nice talent, but there's only one dude on the team right now who is supposed to be an impactful player for a really good team as a freshman. And that's the one who actually is an impactful. It's Precious Achiuwa. The rest of them, we can argue they're not as good as they were supposed to be. Maybe that's Boogie Ellis. And that they were better than they were supposed to be. Perhaps that's DJ Jeffries. But none of them, based on where they were ranked in high school, are supposed to be big, impactful players at the collegiate level. The best player on this team needed to be James Wiseman. The second best player on this team needed to be Precious Achiuwa. And then whether it's Boogie Ellis, DJ Jeffries, and it looks like it would have been DJ Jeffries as your third best player, well, then that's a quality basketball team that's probably ranked in the top 20 all season and on its way to the NCAA tournament easily. But when you remove, you know, the best player from that class, it just changes things drastically. I don't know why that's hard to understand.
Right. And even Precious, as you see him, he has been dominant. But you can also see that he is an immature player, right? He does not always use his gifts to his best advantage or to the best advantage of the team. And listen, he's not going to be here after this year. But I can tell you that if he were here for 1, 2, 3, 4 years, he would figure that out, right? He would be a much better player. So even Precious, in his weak moments, and you do see them when he forces shots or whatever else, he's being an immature player. Having said all that, they better win. they better win, yes.
But he's also not a playmaker. You know, he can get stuff in transition. You can throw things at the rim, he'll dunk it. You can miss a shot, he'll get it. But the idea that you just throw the ball to him and let him make a play, I mean, in recent weeks, he's more likely just to pull up jump shot than actually try to make a play. Like, he is not this playmaking wing that I think he probably thinks he is. He's a athletic, bouncy, high motor, small ball four. I mean, that's what he is.
But then why is he getting the ball out on the wing so much?
Fair question. Who else are you giving it to? I mean, I think that is ultimately the problem with closing games. I talked about this earlier. You know, you look at just over the past few days, like teams that closed games really well. Maryland over the weekend at Michigan State, they closed the game with Anthony Cowan, a senior guard who is a playmaker and a shot maker. All right, so that's that. Kentucky last night against LSU closed the game well. With who? Emmanuel Quickley, you know, a non-freshman, you know, shooter slash scorer. And if it wouldn't have been him, it could have been Tyrese Maxey. If it wouldn't have been Tyrese Maxey, it could have been Ashton Hagans. They got lots of options. But the way you typically close games in college basketball, and in the NBA as well, I suppose, is with playmaking guards. They can either make plays for themselves or make plays for other people. So who on the Memphis team do you trust right now to make a from the backcourt to make a play for themselves or somebody else in a late-game situation? I don't know that I trust anybody.
Nobody. I mean, honestly, the guy who it's being left to and who has been disappointing, particularly the way he started the year, is A-Lo. Because against Tennessee, A-Lo was making all the right plays, for example, down the stretch. But lately, I mean, the ball has been in his hands and has not worked out well. Boogie's not a true point. Honestly, DJ Jeffries, obviously not a point guard, but he could make plays. You could give the ball to DJ Jeffries on the wing and he could make a play. And he could make a play for Precious, among other things. So I think that's one of the places where you miss DJ, because that's one of the things that he could do that you don't really trust anyone else to do in particular.
You could actually throw the ball to DJ Jeffries on the wing and ask him to make a play. And right now, and I say this as somebody who thinks Alex Lomax is an important part of the program, and I'm glad he's there. I think if he's a four-year player, he's going to be a really good four-year college basketball player. He shouldn't. If that's who you're giving the ball to in late-game situations, then you've got a fundamental problem with your basketball team.
I mean, that is. We saw that against Cincinnati. Like, they literally had a last-second shot to win it. Where'd it go to? Went to Alex Lomax. That was the play. It was Alex Lomax. That's what they're doing. They're putting the ball in Alex Lomax's hands. He's not good enough.
And when you're the opposition and you know he's a non-shooter, then you can just play for him to drive.
Right.
And then when he drives, you just, you know, you contest everything or just pin it against the backboard or, you know, block it into the fourth row. It's just very – he's just not equipped to do it. You know, he's just not equipped to do it. That's the nicest way I can – it's not like he can't –
No, he could run the team and he could get the ball in the hands of DJ Jeffries to do it, but he can't do it himself. That's just true. He ain't John Morant.
Right. He's not John Morant. You know, and so it's just all of it's a problem. But still, you need to knock out East Carolina at home and at least, you know, get a taste of winning again, because I can rationalize why this team's not going to be in the NCAA tournament. But that is not also a rationalization for, why you can't beat East Carolina at home. Although I will say, I hear this all the time, and I imagine you have too. People will tell me, okay, I get it. They lost James Wiseman. They lost DJ Jeffries. I understand why they're not as good as they were supposed to be. But they still got enough talent to beat, you know, South Florida or Tulsa or, you know, whoever else. Because people are just looking at talent as an individual thing. Like, you know, like these, this is the talented individuals you have. They're better than the talented individuals this other team has. Therefore, you should beat this other team. It's why I've tried to stress the specifics here. They didn't just, it's one thing to lose transfers in the offseason or somebody early to the NBA draft. You have an entire offseason to prepare for that. When you lose players midseason, you are immediately and in real time, I've talked to coaches about this before, you're suddenly asking you're asking everybody to have a different role. So everything that everybody thought they were going to be is now different. Because, you were going to be the four next to James Wiseman, but now you're the five. You were going to be a secondary option. Now you're our primary option. You were going to be a point guard who is in late-game situations creating something but then getting it here or here. Now you're in late-game situations and we need you to actually make the play. Everything that everybody does becomes something different, and it's hard to manage. Like Isaac Okoro isn't the difference between, you know, and based on talent, between Auburn being 10 points better than Missouri or 12 points worse than Missouri. But when you take him and everything he brings away from it, and then in real time, a matter of days, you have to tell, okay, now this is your job, and now this is your job, and now we need you to do this. It just becomes difficult to ask college players in real time to all adapt to new roles and be great at it. And so the losing players midseason, that's the other killer here. It's one thing if you knew in July that James Wiseman wasn't going to be a part of the team. You know, you can start thinking along those lines. Or if you knew in July that DJ Jeffries didn't exist. But when you have to try to adjust in real time, it's a real obstacle. And it's one that basketball teams deal with all over this country. It's not unique to Memphis. It's happening in Arkansas right now. It's happening at Auburn right now.
And it's also true that just because you have enough talent and you are therefore a more talented team doesn't mean you always win that game. I mean, we see that all over college basketball. Yes, they are more talented than South Florida. And if they played South Florida 10 times, they probably beat more. But they're also a bad matchup with South Florida. And so there are times it's a basketball game. There are times that South Florida will win that contest. North Carolina, without Cole Anthony, was still better than Wofford. They still lost to Wofford. Like, I mean, just because you have more talent doesn't mean that you win all those games. If you have a lot more talent, it gives you a lot more room for error, and you probably wouldn't win more of those games. But when it's marginally more talent, then it's like, okay, you win most of them, but some you won't. Like, you'll beat UConn here, and you'll lose to UConn there. That seemed reasonable to me. There's nothing unreasonable what happened with UConn, for example, at all. It would have been... You nearly beat Cincinnati, and I don't know that they should have beaten Cincinnati, but they nearly beat Cincinnati and could easily have beaten Cincinnati. And then would Cincinnati have said, well, we should still be able to beat Memphis without James Wiseman and DJ Jeffries? Like, yeah, they should have, but they nearly didn't. So, I mean, just because you have more talent doesn't mean you don't ever slip up and always win every game you're supposed to. But the margin for error went away when they lost those two players.
Well, like, again, like, that's the other dumb thing that you hear all the time. Like, I try to explain and give examples and root it in facts and, like, in the simplest of terms, here is why Memphis is not going to be good going forward, because they lost their best player and the third best player before February 1st, and teams are not good once that happens to them. And then somebody will jump in and say, yeah, but GP, they had DJ Jeffries when they lost to Tulsa. And I'm like, oh, exactly what you just said. Okay, that's true. But what you're implying is they should never lose a game they're not supposed to lose when they've got DJ Jeffries in the lineup. Like Penn State is maybe going to win a Big Ten title. They're certainly competing for it. They also, at some point in the season, lost to Ole Miss. Like, it happens. You lose games you're not supposed to lose. So you cannot be dismissive or discount what losing James Wiseman and DJ Jeffries, or for the purposes of this point, strictly DJ Jeffries, you can't discount what not having him means by saying, well, they lost this game over here with him. Well, they were always going to lose games with him. I'm just telling you, they wouldn't be sitting here with this record if they still had DJ Jeffries on the lineup. That's all. Like, the fact that they lost a game they weren't supposed to lose with DJ Jeffries doesn't change that fact.
And I'm telling the people out there that if you want Gary to stop talking about this, just that you have it in your power, just stop arguing with him over and accept it as a truism that no team which loses its best and third best pro prospects escapes unscathed. There you go.
Normally I need you to tell me I'm right. I don't even need that in this one. I know I'm right. I don't even need to hear it. I just need you to stop trying to argue with me. And then we can all talk about other things. I'm happy to talk about other things. I don't need to hear I'm right. I know I'm right. I just need you to stop trying to argue when you have nothing to base your argument on. All right. I'm going to wrap this show up and get in studio and get all ready to talk about James Wiseman quitting before Christmas.
See you, GP.
I'll see you later. Bye-bye. That's Jeff Calkins here on 92.9 FM ESPN. Hey, some interesting soccer news today with 901 FC.
What's going on?
I'll tell you right after this break.
Guests appear on the Smile Center Hotline. Now, back to the Gary Parish Show, broadcasting from the Bluff Restaurant and Sports Bar Studios on 92.9 FM ESPN.
And deal with a family-owned business that treats people like people, not like customers, please go visit my friends at Mercedes-Benz of Memphis, 5389 Poplar. That's 5389 Poplar on the web, mbofmemphis.com. Mercedes is, yes, a luxury vehicle, but in some cases, I hope you realize, they're more affordable than most people probably think. The new A-Class model, for instance, starts at just $32,000. That means you can have a brand new Mercedes from Mercedes-Benz of Memphis starting at just $32,000, and some leases start as low as $339 a month for 26 months. If you haven't been there, get by there and check it out. 5389 Poplar, 5389 Poplar. While you're there, take a stroll through the AMG showroom. The AMG models are high-performance machines. They look aggressive. They're super fast. You will fall in love with them at first sight. You can see them at 5389 Poplar. That's the intersection of Poplar and Valley Brook. Certified pre-owned vehicles at Mercedes-Benz of Memphis. Got interest rates starting as low as 1.99. That's at Mercedes-Benz of Memphis, our city's original Mercedes dealership. On the web, mbofmemphis.com. That's mbofmemphis.com. Got some interesting soccer development, Bennett, earlier today.
What's going on?
Josie Baxter, are you familiar?
No.
Okay, Josie Baxter is now a member of 901 FC.
Okay.
And this dude is somebody who was starting in the Premier League at the age of 16 for Everton. He's the youngest player to ever start for Everton. And at the time, which was back in 2008, he was the second youngest player to ever start in the Premier League. And he's still only 28 years old, just turned 28 a couple of weeks ago. And now he is a member of 901 FC. He is going to be the midfielder that changes everything for 901 FC.
How about that? We need a bounce back season.
We need a bounce back season.
Yeah.
I see the supporters down in Birmingham have been talking crazy online. You seen this?
I have seen this, yes.
What's going on with that?
You know, I mean, there's not a lot going on in Birmingham. Like, what are you going to do?
Why does Birmingham want beef with Memphis?
I mean, they ain't got a lot to do down there. They got to jump on with us to be able to have any kind of recognition.
Well, I hope, Birmingham, that you got all your jokes off because now the game changer has materialized. Josie Baxter going to be a member of 901 FC. The connection, by the way, is obviously Tim Howard. Tim and Josie were teammates with Everton. Tim made more than 400 appearances with Everton, and he was in goal when Josie Baxter debuted for Everton back in 2008. So this is a neat deal. A big name coming to play soccer in downtown Memphis. The announcement came earlier today. Here's a quote from Tim Howard. He said, "His technical ability and toughness are unquestioned at the highest levels of world football. With experience in the English Premiership and Championship, we're excited to have him be an integral part of our midfield." That's Tim Howard on Josie Baxter. So I know what some of you are probably thinking. Okay, Premier League, Everton, he's only 28 years old. What is he doing playing for Memphis?
Yeah, what happened?
He's had off the pitch issues.
Oh.
There's been multiple suspensions for for drug use. And so he is, I guess, an example of somebody who is trying to get his career and by extension life back on track. And so hopefully that can, you know, happen in Memphis, because by all accounts he is an elite talent. Like, at the very least, he was once upon a time. Again, he was starting in the Premier League at 16 years old.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Like, that's not a normal thing. No. At the time, second youngest player to ever start in the Premier League, and he still remains the youngest player to ever start for Everton. So, big development for soccer fans and the soccer franchise here in Memphis. Josie Baxter is a member of 901 FC. And the home opener.
Yeah, they start their preseason this weekend.
Yeah, preseason coming up, and then the home opener is March 7th. They're going to be playing Indy 11, which I hate Indy 11, by the way.
I hate them, too.
I grew up hating Indy 11.
Damn them.
I have incredible disdain for Indy 11 and everything Indy 11 stands for. So when they're coming into AutoZone Park on March 7th, well, they should have a crowd waiting on them. Tickets are available right now, Memphis901FC.com, Memphis901FC.com. And I think it's well established at this point that it's a tremendous time. I mean, just an absolute great experience at a sporting event. You know, I hate that the season starts when basketball season is still going on and I'm not even in town, because it makes it very difficult to go. Like, I don't know where I'll be March 7th, but I doubt I'll be in Memphis, Tennessee. You know, after basketball was over last year, and my life slowed down a little bit. You know, Kelly and I did take the boys out to a match. I was able to smash a guitar pregame. I think it's also well documented. I was one of the better guitar smashers of all the guitar smashers in 901 FC's inaugural season. And I appreciated them letting me do that. The boys had a blast. And just the whole experience in general was just a lot of fun. Like, you don't have to be a soccer fan to have a good time at a 901 FC match. I suppose it helps, but I know a lot of people who don't care much about soccer who would go to AutoZone Park for a 901 FC match and enjoy it immensely. And so I imagine year two will be even better than year one. And again, the big news today, Josie Baxter is now a member of 901 FC, formerly of Everton, teammates with Tim Howard. He'll now be playing midfield for 901 FC when this season starts. Season opener, March 7th against Indy 11. We'll be back. Dinner to go. So John had a home here in Memphis, needed to sell it because he was relocating for work. So he did what I've been telling you to do for years now. He got in touch with Josh Hysall. Josh Hysall went to work, and he sold John's home for the full asking price on the very first day it was listed. How did he do it? He did it with a 45-day guarantee. It's a system for selling homes that creates more demand and gets homes sold faster and for more money than the average agent. Josh is able to do this because he's experienced, effective. He knows how to expose your home to the most buyers with the best marketing strategy. Then he knows how to negotiate for the most money possible. But the first step is Josh just helping you price your home in a way that makes it attractive. Once you guys agree on a price, Josh is going to go to work. And then if your home isn't sold in 45 days at that agreed upon price, Josh will step in and make the mortgage payments until it sells, or he'll simply buy the home from you. You pick. Totally up to you, and it is a risk-free proposition. Working with Josh doesn't obligate you to anything. If he isn't doing his job, in your opinion, even if your opinion makes no sense, you can fire him, no questions asked. He's got flexible fees. There are no upfront costs. So if you're trying to sell a home, call the only real estate agent I'd call if I wanted to sell my home. And it's a guy who's outselling the average agent 25-1. It's Josh Hysall. 461-8147. 461-8147. On the web, joshsellsthemidsouth.com.
Get to us a Sunday.
Guests appear on the Smile Center Hotline. Now, back to the Gary Parish Show, broadcasting from the Bluff Restaurant and Sports Bar Studios on 92.9 FM ESPN.
Are you in the market for a computer? If so, get in touch with Lee and Lauren Cooper over at Cooper Systems, Mount Moriah Office Park on the web, coopersystems.com. I've been telling you about them for years, since the day this show started, which feels like a million years ago at this point. If you're looking for a computer, high-end, low-end, middle-of-the-road, desktop, notebook, tablet, doesn't matter. They got it. Or they can get it for you, they can build it for you. And the great thing about Cooper Systems is it's not a big box store. You know, the big box stores, they got the brand-new computers, and that's what they got. So if you want a computer and you go there, you buy them one of them. At Cooper Systems, maybe you just need a backup machine. Maybe you need something for one of the kids to bang around on. Maybe you need something because you're somebody who only plays on Facebook, YouTube, email. You're not trying to make a music video. So you don't need to pay $1,500 for a computer. You maybe just need to pay a few hundred dollars for a computer. And if that's the case, they got computers for a few hundred dollars at Cooper Systems. That's where you're going to find something that's better suited for you. And if it's better suited for you, it's going to be better price for you. You're saving money at Cooper Systems. 360-9679. 360-9679. Cooper Systems. Mount Moriah Office Park on the web. CooperSystems.com. Let's do Dinner to Go.
Dinner to Go is brought to you by Memphis Barbecue Company. It's Dinner to Go. What did we learn today?
Oh, man, we learned so much.
I learned a lot.
Man, we learned so much, yeah. But we once again largely focused on Memphis basketball, and I didn't want to spend too much time talking about the big picture stuff as much as the little picture stuff, because the common denominator in the past four losses, UConn, Cincinnati, USF, SMU, is that Memphis led in the second half of every one of those games, led by double digits with 6 minutes to go in two of those games. They couldn't close any of them, so that's what I'm looking forward to most tonight in this East Carolina-Memphis game. I assume Memphis is going to have a first-half lead, and I would hope Memphis has a second-half lead. But if it ends up in a situation where it's a one-possession, two-possession, three-possession game, final 5 or 6 minutes, that has not been a recipe for good stuff in recent Memphis games. Can you close this out, and how do you do it? That's something to pay attention to with Memphis, because if you're trying to figure out why they've lost some of these games that looked winnable in the final 6 or 7 minutes, it is rooted in that. If you're trying to figure out why the team's not as good as it was a month ago, or the team's not as good as people thought, that's simple. They lost their leading score and their third leading score both before February. But when you're up double digits with 6 minutes to go, you against unranked teams like SMU and Cincinnati, you're supposed to win those games. That they didn't win those games in a vacuum is disappointing. And so I'll be interested to see what happens tonight if Memphis finds itself in a close-this-game situation. How do they do it? Do they get it done? That's what I'll be watching for.
What's the biggest game tonight?
East Carolina at Memphis. It's inside FedEx Forum. 6 o'clock tip. So it's coming up here in a few minutes. You'll be able to watch it on CBS Sports Network. That's the 24-hour home of CBS Sports. Memphis, 13-point favorite. The total is 141. I'll be in studio, so I'll talk to you at halftime.
What should I watch on TV?
Well, Jeff and I talked about it earlier in the hour. Another Democratic candidates debate is on television tonight. We're just 3 days away before the Nevada caucuses, and you're going to have 6 people on the stage. Joe Biden, Michael Bloomberg, Pete Buttigieg, Amy Klobuchar, Bernie Sanders, and Elizabeth Warren. It's going to be at the Paris Theater in Las Vegas. It starts at 8. It's on NBC, and on the late night circuit, Chris Pratt's on Jimmy Kimmel, Jennifer Lopez is on Jimmy Fallon, Laura Dern's on Stephen Colbert, Tiffany Haddish is on Seth Meyers, and Justin Bieber, for the second straight night, will be on James Corden.
Is there anything I need to make sure I read?
My colleague Matt Norlander wrote an extensive piece on Zeke Nagy, one of the more surprising freshmen at Arizona. This is a guy who wasn't one of Arizona's 5 stars, but he has developed into a likely first-round pick, just a statistical monster for Sean Miller's team this season. It's a basketball player who has a lot of interest outside of basketball. So if you haven't read that yet, go check it out, CBSSports.com.
What's on tap for tomorrow?
Well, it'll be Thursday, so we'll be looking back at Memphis, East Carolina. We'll be looking ahead to Grizzlies, Kings. I'm going to have Drew Hill, Memphis beat writer from the Daily Memphian, in the first hour. Jeff Calkins will join me in the second. It should be fun. Enjoy your night. I'll enjoy mine, and then we're going to meet back here tomorrow at 4. Till then, be careful, be kind, be good, rep your hood.